This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3184 for Thursday, the 15th of October 2020. Today's show is entitled Linux in Laws Season 1 Episode 15, Its Security and Stick Insects, and is part of the series Linux in Laws. It is hosted by Monochromec and is about 56 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is how to secure photos of your stick insect collection and more.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35, or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. This is Linux in Laws, Season 1, Episode 15. IT security and stick insects.
Hi, Chris. Martin. How are things? Great and wonderful. How about yourself?
Perfect. How is the weather over there? Can't complain. We're having a beautiful Indian summer with about with about 12.
Yeah, rain. Okay. Rain. Yeah, that makes a change.
We do, yes, for a change. Yeah, this is what we borrowed from the UK, and I'm more than happy to give it back now.
To make the beer, surely.
Well, we just borrowed it from the UK.
I understand.
And once we're fed up with it, we'll give it back. That's the deal, right?
What have I got?
Drinking beer even more so. Cheers.
Well, there we go.
Well spotted, Martin. Well spotted. Yeah. How are things over there in the UK? Still struggling with something called Brexit, are you?
Is it actually going ahead? Well, there are various things going on, but stop it.
What did Boris say last night during the telco?
Which one?
You had. I thought you had regular telco.
Yeah, it was usually about coronavirus. No? Did he have a Brexit briefing?
Brexit.
I don't think he has daily Brexit briefings.
No. I thought he was asking advice from yourself.
The Dutch perspective.
Well, that sort of thing.
Maybe he should have done that a bit earlier. It's a bit late now, isn't it?
Watch out the bridge! Boris, if you're listening to this, not all is lost, just give Martin a ring. He'll sort you out.
In more than one Maybe. Way, yes. Okay.
Okay, on to our favorite subject, Martin.
No,
Emma.
Emma
rang. Sorry, we keep that for the feedback. Sorry. No, as a matter of fact, it's not.
Is it not?
On to much more neutral ground. I can still cut this out, I hope. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Martin, for the esteemed listenership, Martin had the brilliant idea, and this is not ironic for a change, of doing an episode on ITSec. So Martin went ahead and prepared a couple of questions, and what we're going to do now, we're going to go through these questions one by one. Needless to say, this is all very theoretical, no indeed. Practical strings attached. So none of the following basically can be put into practice on good use. You have been warned.
Needless to
say, don't try this at home.
Your advice is completely useless.
Well, I've only done a CISSP as a certified information security professional, a certified ethical hacker, a certified secure software lifecycle professional, and some other IT security accreditation. So the following is purely theoretical.
Practice, oh dear.
And the rest I can't really talk about.
fair enough. Right, let's crack on then. So we have a imaginary character. Let's say is. I was going.
Let's call him Martin for a change.
Since I'm asked.
Fair enough. That's kind of Chris.
So, Chris is your average German living in Berlin.
England? Excellent, Martin.
Your average
keep
German
them coming.
In Berlin, who uses the internet for shopping, for banking. What is the internet?
What's the internet?
Okay. So Chris is not familiar with the internet, is he? Or
I do not know. Do explain more.
This Chris has a at home. He has a telephone, and he has something called Wi-Fi, which he calls the internet. And so he uses this Wi-Fi to buy stuff, to do his banking. He's heard about cryptocurrencies, so he decided to put his spare.
Martin, I really think we should call him Martin rather than Chris, because this is much closer to home.
No, I don't do any shopping online. Or bank.
Sorry, right. I'm just saying.
Peter.
Oh, let's call him Peter. As in Peter C, yes.
Is that a German name?
As in C, period. No, but you see... well, if we call him Peter Carlo, he might be listening,
okay,
so he might get offended. So we just call him Peter C. That's okay. Peter is of course a Dutch name.
Well,
come to think of it, as in P-I-E-T-E-R. Peter Carlo of Friendly Slaps fame. If you're listening, this is purely not unrelated. So don't worry about it. Don't get offended by no means. Yes. Let's call her Emma.
Emma doesn't do any online banking.
Okay.
She does cash only, apparently.
David. Let's call him David.
Right.
For a change. Yes, David it is. Yes, okay.
That leaves us with 5 minutes to all the questions.
Indeed.
All right. What was his name? David.
Go ahead, Martin.
Yes.
What does the David do,
so
and
David,
why he's concerned about IT security?
Shopping, banking, crypto, investments. And he has a large collection of photographs of his beloved stick insects. Now, animals.
What are stick insects?
No, they resemble a stick, so that's why they're called stick insects. You may never have seen one, because you may have mistaken
English
one
English invention
for a
or something?
Or a stick. Anyway.
I see. This comes close to collecting coins and collecting stamps, right? In terms of riveting adventures.
Even harder than this place, especially if you look around the garden. The coins and stamps, I'm sure.
So you collect them, but they're still alive.
I guess you could...
and then you...
Yes.
Yeah, but then there certainly would be dead.
Ask David. I don't know anything about sticking.
But apart from
what they look like.
But I digress, of course.
There's a certain diversion tactic here going on to not answer any questions, perhaps.
No, Martin, there isn't. Go ahead.
Right, so David had this brilliant idea. Where am I going to keep my photos? And then where is he going to keep his password? Because he had been using the same password for all his accounts. And then someone said, "Ooh, this is a bad idea." So he then thought, am I going to change all these things? How am I going to remember them? Fine. So passwords for his banks, his shopping accounts, his dodgy websites, his...
What are dodgy websites?
Websites who dodge.
Do websites dodge? Like from bullets and stuff and whatever. Oh, well, I don't know.
Indeed. But there is also a different...
Fair enough.
...connotation meaning for it. The beginning.
Okay, let's start the beginning, Martin. These pictures... Yes. These pictures of stick insects...
They're
digital, fair enough, yes. How would they be rated? Are we talking about XXX pictures like stick insects copulating and stuff?
I don't know.
Are we talking about innocent pictures like...
This is a theoretical question, right? I don't know any Davis.
I see, okay. So the idea is basically... Oh, you do know quite a few Davids, Martin, don't worry.
By the way, do you collect tickets? Just, yeah.
Martin, don't ask him. You might get offended, the David that I'm just thinking about. Fair enough. Okay, David wants to collect these cherished photos of stick insects somewhere secure.
In many meanings, right, so portable.
Portable.
Wants to be able to access them anywhere, so he can show them at his at the yearly stick insect conference, you know, stuff like that, right? Yes.
Riveting. So in that case, I reckon he should put them onto a USB, which is encrypt stick, that is. Because we are talking about stick insects, right?
Carry on.
Okay. Couple of things come to mind. He can build his own personal cloud, like a Nextcloud instance, which he can subsequently secure. Or
sounds
if
a bit challenging for David,
wants to put these, it depends on the technical knowledge that David has.
Just uses the internet or shopping, etc.
Okay. If David wants to put these pictures onto a USB stick, there are a couple of options. He can completely secure the USB stick with an encrypted file system, or he can partly secure a certain directory of said stick. I assume we are talking about real operating systems like open source ones, like the BSDs of the world,
so
like the Linuxes of the world.
David is not familiar with. He has a PC, which he has bought in PC World. Which is unlikely to run Linux, right?
Excellent.
It's unlikely to.
It's not already.
How many commercial off-the-shelf machines come with Linux these days?
Dell, Lenovo, and some other vendor. System 76. There's a German company and some other.
But they are
outfits.
Still small in number, right?
Okay. Yes. Since this podcast apparently is about open source software, we are not considering closed source approaches now. So the first order of business for David is actually to go to his local lug and reformat the machine and put some open source operating system on it, like FreeBSD, like a NetBSD, or push comes to shove, as in worst comes to worst, Linux. If I recall correctly, this podcast is aptly called Linux In-Laws,
well,
if I'm completely mistaken.
Put Linux on your PC.
So going forward, we assume that David has, in its infinite wisdom, installed Linux on his PC instead of some closed-source proprietary operating system. So with that, he has quite a few options at his disposal. He can, as I said, completely encrypt the USB stick using something like Lux, meaning that even below the file system, like X2, 3, or 4, you would have an encryption layer. Or, if he chooses to do so, he can He can encrypt parts like a subdirectory of the offset USB stick, with the likes of ENCFS as EncryptionFS or EncryptFS. You'll find all of the links in the show notes. How to install these encryption subsystems and
so
how
these
to
are
use them.
Software solutions, right?
Meaning.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
He has seen an advert for hardware. Encrypted USB sticks. What's your opinion on those?
If they're proprietary, forget about them because they could contain backdoors.
Good point.
If it's proprietary, you never know what the software is like.
Are you going to a particular country?
No, I'm just saying.
You've been speaking to Donald recently.
I normally don't buy encrypted USB.
Okay.
No, if you buy something that is hardware encrypted, you never know what the story is. Take a look at CPM, Trusted Platform Module. Yes, you can use it as a fancy keystone and all the rest of it, but at the end of the day, you're looking at a Minix kernel, or Minix-based kernel, sorry, Andrew, if you're listening, Andrew Tannenbaum, of course, but Intel has done much more with his Minix source code than just providing a secure key space or key store. Apparently, you can infiltrate the operating system using TPM. It has its own web server of sorts or something. So there's much more that you simply don't see running on ring minus one. If you are using Intel, so kids. Don't try this at home. Don't buy, unless you know what you're doing, unless you buy a USB stick where the vendor has open sourced their hardware encryption that you can basically trust in. Don't buy closed source hardware encrypted USB keys. Rather, put your own encrypted file system on it so you have full control.
Excellent.
That will be my advice for David.
We'll appreciate that. Excellent piece of advice. That sounds very sensible. So, we have two pieces of advice so far. One, reformat your PC, put Linux on it to use a software encrypted USB key for as an option for your... Now, David, I've also
stick
heard
and
about
something pictures.
Cloud, as in not stuff in Sky, and he has heard you can put stuff in that. Now, so he was thinking, oh, I'm going to use this cloud. I can put my pictures in there, show them to my conferences, and my local user groups.
Excellent choice, David, especially if this cloud thing is prefixed with something called Next, which for a change doesn't refer to the line of ancient computer hardware, but rather refers to file syncing software, which is open source. The beauty about this, basically, is you can put it on your own servers,
okay.
And it's under your full control.
Like, David's work is just expanded even further than before, having to reformat his machine, go to his local user group, and install his own home server on NextCloud. He's no longer your average German called David.
With wisdom comes responsibility because there's power involved. So wisdom, power, responsibility, simple as that. No, I mean, jokes aside, if you use a service provider like Google, like Microsoft, like Facebook, you only pay some money for the services that you use, but more often than not, especially if you're using an allegedly free service like Facebook, you'd pay with your data.
And what about the
legislation
around data at cloud vendors being accessible to the US government?
Indeed. I mean, what's called privacy shield or something, right? I mean, don't worry about this. If you're using a cloud provider of US origin, if you're using a cloud provider of US origin, never mind whether he or she or they guarantee, rather, they are hosting your data on non-US soil here, Dream On. Because all their data centers are interconnected, and if the FBI is under the impression they want to take a look at your data, they certainly can, privacy should or not. This is just illegal destruction. Technically, you're open. You're an open book. Unless, and this is basically where the whole thing kicks in, you run your own server with your own software, with your own infrastructure which you control.
Yeah.
In that case, foreign security foreign security entities will have a very hard time, especially if done correct, of getting to your data. Stick insects are not.
Right.
There was still a question left about password storage, if I'm completely mistaken.
Indeed, indeed. So, David has many passwords, right, for his bank, his various shopping outlets online, his dodgy websites, etc. Where does he keep them all so that he doesn't have to remember them? And can access them from many different devices.
A valid question indeed. The homegrown solution, and this is kind of a tried and tested approach, would be to use an open source password manager like KeePass, some of the more popular password manager. Mm-hmm. By the way, you'll find all the corresponding links in the show notes, so not to worry about this. KeePass runs on multiple platforms, runs on multiple architectures, and of course, all that is required for KeePass is essentially a file system location where it stores the encrypted password. So essentially, if you set up a Nextcloud instance, if you then point KeePass to this Nextcloud instance, ideally encrypted in terms of that we discussed before, you have all of the passwords at your disposal on each and every device that is supported by Nextcloud, including your mobile devices. Because what you essentially do is you store your passwords on this Nextcloud instance, and then you download the corresponding files onto the corresponding device and simply point the instance of KeePass running on this device at this location, and you're all set.
Excellent. Sounds like a good solution. And any alternatives to KeePass, Dudley?
I'm sure there are multiple things that come to mind. KeePass is probably the most popular one. Again, there are certain cloud-based services, paid and free ones. Personally, and I reckon that goes for Dave as well, David, I wouldn't trust these providers because these passwords would then be, like LastPass, for example. These cloud providers basically take your data, although they tell you that this is secure, because more often than not, the underlying software infrastructure is closed source. You don't know what they're using. They don't know what they're doing with your data. So, bottom line is, if you want to stay in control, do it yourself. Simple.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, so I think that leads us to the conclusion that if you want to do anything secure, you run it yourself on your own server.
Indeed.
Okay.
Because the more you give away, the more you lose control.
Uh-huh.
Simple.
Yes, agreed. So, okay, so David has 1 year later, David is running his own server for his file sharing, for his password file, for his, what else is he running? IP security cameras, his doorbell, obviously.
Obviously, of course, yes.
It's most important, yeah. Now, how does he secure all that?
Apparently, David has grown up now, because if he's running a web server, for other purposes than just running Nextcloud, apparently that requires an initial approach at how to secure this. The old adage still applies. There is no such thing as an unbreakable system. Even systems that are not connected to this cat video file sharing network called the internet are still subject to compromise, because if it's not connected to the internet, you simply break into the facility where the machine is hosted.
Well,
now, you may secure this facility left, right, and center, but that only means raising the bar. So it's just a matter of bankrolling the project, because there is, as history shows us, there's no such thing as a secure site. You can only raise the bar. So your average Joe Block doesn't necessarily break into Fort Knox for a reason, because that site is heavily secured. But that aside, yes. But given enough money, given enough time, given enough effort, and these are obviously all equivalent, somebody, of course, can break into Fort Knox. Never mind the security put around it. So it's like a cat and mouse game. Now, needless to say, for doing so, there must be a corresponding interest, because your ordinary thief wouldn't have the means at his or her disposal to break into Fort Knox, because you're looking at, I reckon, at least 7 or 8 digits in order to bankroll the project. Because you're talking about multiple teams, sussing out the vicinity, taking a close look at the physical security, taking a close look at the policies surrounding Fort Knox and all the rest of it. You're probably, and this is just a wild guess, you're looking at a year plus. So this doesn't come easy. But once you're inside Fort Knox, how many billions of dollars are at your disposal then, Martin? A couple of them, right?
It's the Federal Treasury Reserve. Gold. Yeah, I'm not sure if that still happens. Gold is it's kind of obsolete. It's just paper now, yes.
Apparently some people have tried, but so far all have failed for a reason, that is.
Yeah.
Back to the subject at hand.
Indeed.
Indeed, sorry, before I digress more and Barton gets annoyed,
Interesting theory about Fort Knox, but yeah, I'm tempting that one to the
No, not anytime soon, exactly. No, you see, the whole thing is basically do it with intelligence, in terms of before you even sit down and kind of plan your whole endeavor, you take a close look at what are the risks at hand, how can I mitigate them, avoid them, or transfer them. This is the usual approach, like taking out insurance. That would be, for example, transferring a risk. Mitigation would be to deploy a firewall or two. So the idea is basically you take a look at your scenario, you take a look at what's at stake, and then you intelligently assess the risk attached to each and every item.
Okay.
Exactly. So once you've done this exercise, let's take the example of a web server, or a general domestic infrastructure, let's put it this way. You should arrive at something called a DMZ architecture, outlining the demilitarized zones that you need right from your network router to your crown jewels, including firewalls, intrusion detection systems, intruding prevention systems, and all the rest of them. Once you've done this, it's just a matter then of securing the various parameters and hardening the underlying infrastructures, like the operating system, like any virtual machine that you're using, like any containers that you're deploying, like any firewall systems that are guarding your DMZs, never mind IPSs and IDSs. Once you've done this, you probably have raised the bar sufficiently enough that anybody without the corresponding means at his or her disposal, you have probably a very hard time breaking into your system.
Right, when you refer to means here, you mean the actual physical hijacking of these servers?
Okay, how would you break into a system, Martin? All you have is basically one IP address. What do you do?
Scan some ports first, see what's open.
Excellent idea. What happens then?
Hang on a minute. You're not supposed to be answering questions.
No, Mark. Let's flip the table for a bit.
Oh, not sure.
Totally xenophobic, sorry, yes. Okay, once you've done a port scan, you have what?
Some open ports.
Yes, and if you do it intelligently, you also have the services, including the version numbers, behind these ports. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is your first attack vector, because now, depending on the information, you can deploy a couple of threats in terms of how can I break into Apache version 2.4 point something with the particular patch level? What is the attack surface?
Right.
Once you've mapped this out, you are, well, I wouldn't say you're halfway there, but you have at least made a first foray into the network.
So here, the important point here is really is to keep your all your software patch right now because of the
very important
known CVEs and stuff.
And the beauty is, of course, open source. The open source world gives you a foray, really a comprehensive array of software infrastructure to harden your system. It starts by hardened operating systems, like Linux, of course, comes to mind. You have various firewalls at your disposal. Most of them would be Arbitable tables-based. And then you have a whole tool chest of tools, ranging from Snort, which is a network-based IDS, right up to something called Fail2Ban, never mind PSAT, two tools which are able to analyze log files and based on the information found in these log files, in the case of Fail2Ban, basically ban IP addresses. And the third tool is PSAT, basically something that is able to detect even port scanning. If PSAT detects in a scan attempt, it will block the corresponding IP address using, again, IP tables or NF tables going forward. So the ecosystem is quite comprehensive. Snort, essentially, which is, again, a popular IDS, takes a look at the network traffic on the network layer flowing through your system.
Yes.
So, if you, for example, attack an SSH server, as a secure shell server, with a certain payload, depending on the patch level, chances are this SSH instance is vulnerable and will let you into the system without proper authentication. This is a network level attack, relying on a malformed network packet. In contrast to this, tools like Fail2Ban essentially analyze log files, and if they come to the conclusion that you're trying to break into the system, will again ban your IP address. Let's continue the example of SSH. If the SSH server log has a certain number of authorization failed entries, Fail2Ban will immediately use IP tables to block the corresponding IP address.
Mm-hmm.
These are two different levels of attack prevention, and again, the open source world is at your disposal with regards to a very comprehensive set of software infrastructure ready to be deployed. It's just a matter of again analyzing your attack surface, sussing out what has to be hardened and to what level it has to be hardened, and then deploying the corresponding software infrastructure to make this secure.
Indeed. However, interesting perspective on SSH servers and dealing with attacks on certain services. Would we not consider running a VPN instead for things like SSH or file sharing that are not necessarily required to be publicly accessible right by anybody but the system owner?
Again, I mean, using commercial VPN service, you never know what's behind it. Do they lock your IP address when you connect to them? I'm led to believe most of the free IP VPN services do this. So you might as well not bother, because once somebody knocks on their doors and they hand over the logs, that's for security. You're much better off using, in that case, you're much better off using something like Tor, as in the Onion router, which is a really anonymizing what network, in contrast to your commercial VPN provider.
Uh-huh. No, unless you're running your own VPN server on your...
Of course, needless to say, yes, you can run your own VPN server. Two very popular tools come to mind: OpenVPN, which is slightly more cumbersome to set up, and in contrast to this, WireGuard, which is probably the latest addition to the ecosystem, as in the new kid on the block. Essentially, it's a VPN that it requires basically is a key pair. As in a public key infrastructure based VPN that is pretty simple to set up. Even somebody called Linus Torvalds has given his blessings to the addition of the corresponding crypto code to the latest kernel version, if memory is anything to go by. So WireGuard is now officially sanctioned. Needless to say, you can get WireGuard also for non-Linux systems. There's a user land implementation in place for OS X, and I understand that there is something called Borington that is a re-implementation of WireGuard written in Rust, funny enough, that also runs on Windows, if memory serves correct.
Okay, good stuff. Right, so I think, would you like to summarize the... Oh, let me do that, so... So, in short, your... David decided to reinstall his machine in Linux. He decided to store his sticky and stick photos on a secure USB stick, software encrypted, fine. He then decided to start running his own web server so he can run Nextcloud for file sharing. And he is going to add some level of intrusion detection through PSAD and filter ban, things like that. Okay, and finally, he is a happy man.
Yes, don't forget to that David will actually put the crown jewels into the cellar beyond the moat, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And David also will get some pair of saber tooth to put into the cellar close to the crown jewels. This is called raising the bar.
Raising the bar, yes. So if that's a good tip for our listeners, if you are very attached to your privateness of your stick insect pictures, get a pair of saber tooth tigers and a cellar.
Especially if the stick insects in the pictures are copulating, because in that case they would be rated triple X, right?
I don't know. Nature programs triple X. I don't think so.
Probably. I don't know.
It's a good question.
Gosh, yeah. Where did the time go?
There you go. That wasn't that hard, was it?
No, Martin. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Now Martin / David knows how to do it properly.
Does he? Okay, I'm sure he's very happy about that.
Excellent. Any concluding remarks, Martin, before we finish off this episode?
I think,
apart from the feedback, which we're going to do in a minute.
I think there's a bit of work to do to convert people to this open source cause, right? It's as we started out with, your average David who goes to PC World to buy his PC, or even the bookshop, whatever, where you buy their PCs these days. Yeah, from there to running your own Linux server is probably quite a big step. So what are you going to do about educating the masses?
Just join your Linux, your local Linux user group. Simple, blatant commercial. Interlude, exactly. there are still Linux user groups around. Just check the cat video network, also known as internet. There's a LUC near you. These LUCs have one big advantage: the chaps or the gals or the people down there in general are more than eager to help you, to lead you to the path of righteousness.
Excellent.
As in forgoing with your closed source operating system and putting some open source alternative on that machine, including all the bells and whistles, depending on your specific requirements. So as a matter of fact, and then it's just basically down to choosing the right distribution, I can recall seeing somebody installing Linux Mint, which is a popular distribution based on Ubuntu, within 15 minutes on his SSD-based Dell XPS 13. So it was just a matter of basically reformatting the partition, putting a Linux Mint-based stick into the USB port, and then rebooting the machine. And within 15 minutes, the base operating system was installed on that laptop. So it's not a big deal, especially with beginner-friendly distributions like Linux Mint, like maybe even Ubuntu.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated at the end of the day. There's something called DistroWatch. The website, I think, is distrowatch.org. You'll find the link in the show notes. Just take a look at it and pick a distribution of choice. It's not that hard.
Excellent. There we are. We have converted the world to Linux. How does that sound?
Not too bad. You have some feedback on the stand?
I do, so do I do, so do way. You. Okay, shall I start or do you want to start?
Yes, please, do.
Okay, this is not actually feedback. This is an email from Dennis in Accounts, our CFO. And he's very happy with the...
Do we have a CFO?
We do. Did you not know Dennis?
No.
Dennis. Let me introduce you to Dennis. He's our CFO. He's in charge of the monies.
How come that we have a CFO and I don't know about it, Martin? Did you hire him personally?
Well, yes, otherwise it would be some dodgy character.
And this didn't get my approval? Are you serious?
Some dodgy character that would steal our money.
Martin, or would this be Dennis, your cousin? As in the one far down from the country?
This, is Dennis, experienced CFO, run 500 startups, raised $2 billion, whatever. Something like that.
I feel I had it coming up.
Dennis has seen the lights and decided that Linux in-laws is the future after doing all the previous startup companies where he made millions of monies. He thinks Linux in-laws is the next big thing. So he's decided to join us to look after our money. There we go.
If he has billions
or our lack of money.
Anyway, beats me. Carry on, Martin.
Right. That's all. Yes.
About the final details.
Final details. So, Dennis, our CFO, he has emailed both you and I. So, I suggest you check your email.
I didn't
email.
Get that mail, but anyway. I didn't get this.
Probably help if you actually read it at some point. But yeah.
Why don't you read it for me, Martin?
Yes, I'll read it for you. Okay, so Dennis says, dear hosts, very pleased with the sponsorship of Regenbogen Escorts. However, the sponsorship amount that they are bringing in, the whole total of €100, is not really adding up to enough to cover Chris's bill with Regenbogen Escorts. There are some items here with an invoice for a Pauline, Sophia, Emilia. So this total of this invoice comes to about €3,000. So our €100 sponsorship is not really making up for this. I suggest you either one, get a better sponsor, or two, consider your expenses again.
Martin, which is more than interesting, because apparently Dennis doesn't know this yet, uh-huh. but after the last feedback that Emma wrote in, basically, I changed this corporate account to my personal one. So any services rendered by Escorts is now coming out of my own pocket.
I'm sure Dennis shouldn't worry about it. Okay. Glad to hear it. That only leaves us with a small €5,000 deficit.
I'm sure we can come up with the money somehow. And if it's just you standing on street corners and selling your body, that's okay by me.
Uh-huh. Oh, I think
feedback you might have.
I think that might be quite successful, but I will delegate that one to you personally.
Okay, fair enough.
All for the greater good.
Anything else that was in the mailbox?
There was more in the mailbox, but this was Dennis's feedback. Why don't you go next? I'll do the other two shortly.
Very good. Where is it? Okay, Emma wrote in. She's congratulations to Martin's... Can I finish this, please?
Regular listener, isn't she?
Absolutely, Martin. But let me finish this. Okay. Emma wrote in. Uh-huh. Congratulations to Martin's new endeavor in the adult entertainment industry. Glad to hear that I could be of assistance to get him started, but sad to hear that the IT industry eventually wasn't for him, as he told me during one of his last visits. Too bad that such an apparent talent is finally lost to the social passion, which is known as open source. But I'm confident that he will make his mark in the delicate realm known as grown-up fantasies, also as he's done numerous times before, if his legend is anything to go by. May the force be with him wherever his road may take him. Please tell him that I'm always there for him should he need further help and support. Never mind a lovely discount on all services rendered. Martin, you have certainly left an impression with Emma.
Very, very nice of her. Yeah, excellent.
Indeed. And Dennis will be glad to hear.
I'm not entirely sure how this is related to the show, but...
If I should change this back to a corporate account, no, Dennis will be glad to hear that apparently now you're in for a lovely discount.
Ah,
on all services rendered, she writes. Martin, do tell more.
Well, discounts are always good, but sponsorship is better, right? That's, yeah.
Do you have a website now, basically?
Do I have a website? I don't have a website.
So how do you promote yourself in the adult entertainment industry if you don't have a website?
I think probably Emma has the wrong Martin. that's always a possibility.
No, she didn't say Martin Visser, but there's only one Martin, basically, availing, or you, who used to avail of a corporate account coming from Linux in-laws, and that would be you.
Right, okay.
I don't know, but certainly. So this GPU database outfit wasn't for you eventually?
It's doing quite nicely, thank you.
Do they know about your, what's it called, the kind of secret existence?
My secret existence? That's a good question.
In the adult entertainment industry?
I could ask you the same about Redis.
Redis, for those few listeners who don't know what Redis is.
I don't think
Redis
that's part of the contract, is it? Do you have any sidelines in adult entertainment?
I do not, Martin.
You don't know? No, neither do I. That's all right.
No, but and I'm not too sure if how Redis features in here, because Redis, as we probably all know, is an open source BSD licensed NoSQL in memory database.
It's debatable, but yes.
No, it's not.
That's not good right now.
Oh, Martin has a lot of work to do, apparently.
Sorry. Okay.
By the way, Dennis is not looking after your books now, is he? I'm just checking.
No, he's looking after our books.
That's good. So you have your own accountant if you are starting off in the adult entertainment industry.
I don't know. Do you need one? Why don't we do a special on Chris's exploits in the adultainment industry? How to set up your account and your website.
That would be a 10 seconds episode, because there aren't any Martin.
Oh, I see. Excellent.
In contrast to other people, uh-huh. if Emma's law is anything to go by.
Emma's law, brilliant. On to the remaining feedback. Yes, the final feedback is from Brona.
Who's Brona?
So Brona wrote in saying, back in 1993, I was going through college, nurses' college in Dublin. And during this time, I met a lovely chap called Chris. We used to call him Little Chris. So I think of him quite fondly sometimes. He was going through college on some EU grant, which he used to mainly spend on myself and my friends to support my income. I had to do various outside of study activities.
Excellent. My past is ugly head, apparently.
I have to say that he was a lovely, lovely guy.
You did sign the NDA. You remember this, right? Yeah. And technically, you are in violation of the non disclosure you signed.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Brona is he's after fame and fortune now.
Good luck to you, brother.
I think breaking the NDA is worth being on Linux.
I wouldn't go that far, but that's my personal opinion anyway.
Anyway, so Broner continues. So little Chris, a lovely little fellow. Some of his requests were a little bit obscure, even for me, having been doing this sideline for a while to get myself through college.
Sideline
of making money by doing outside of study activities.
You mean Martin Wiss's speciality as an adult entertainment?
I don't know. She refers to you as little Chris, so I'm not sure adults are involved.
I don't know. I'm lost anyway.
Right. Okay, so she continues. Yes. So little Chris, lovely little fellow. Some of his requests were a little bit odd. I won't go into too many details because I know this is, even though this is an X-rated show, I don't really want to spill the beans on radio, yes. And I haven't quite forgotten about the NDA.
Very good.
However, there was one occasion, which I will enlighten, which was a very specific request. So Chris just had his monthly EU payment, and he said, "Oh, I really like you, Brona, but can we get your friends Chloe and Shannon involved as well in this activity? Because this is something that I really want to experience while I'm at college in Dublin in 1994.
Now it all comes back. You're talking about the comic artist, right? As in the cartoon artist. Yeah, I can remember that, actually. Okay. There were four girls, which we had a lovely afternoon, and then they saw that stuff to Marvel and made a fortune of it.
I see. Are you not thinking of Charlie's Angels or something?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Let's check.
But it's interesting, Bruno, that you come back after all these years, because I almost had completely forgotten about you.
So why did she have to write an NDA to do cartoons?
Because there was more than one Bruno.
Ah, there's multiple Bronas. Okay.
Yes.
Right. Well, I suspect we'll get further emails. So any other Bronas out there, feel free to write to feedback at linuxin.eu to spill the beans.
Bronas, just in case you remember me, most of the time there would be an NDA in place, bro. Just don't forget to check this before you write in any letters to linuxinlaws.eu.
Excellent.
Anything else you want to discuss, Martin, while we're on the subject?
I think there's probably enough feedback for today.
Okay. On to the much more important stuff, namely the upcoming Halloween episode.
Halloween?
Whoa. Yes, Lassies and Chaps. There will be a special Halloween episode penciled in for, funny enough, for the 31st or around the 31st of October. And for this, we need your questions, because the idea is, never mind how gory these questions are, we will have no censorship, actually, for this episode. So anything goes, just as long as it's open source related. Just send your questions in, and we will do our best to answer them.
Excellent.
And that was the teaser for our upcoming Halloween special.
Okay.
The Linux In-Laws would like to thank Rainbow Escorts for their continued support of this podcast. With more than 30 years of continued service to the FOSS community and way beyond, Rainbow Escorts has more than just deserved a reputation of going the extra mile in terms of pleasuring the masses and then some. No aim too far or peak too high. We even cater for niche groups such as grumpy old coders. Just reach out for a quotation and leave the rest to us. And here's your voucher URL, rainbow-escorts.com/grumpy-old-coders. Enjoy.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for their song Salute Margaret, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC Etchamendo. a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts. Now, yes.
Good morning.
So, to the feedback.
Feedback,
Martin.
Okay, cut.
This is feedback. Cut, yes, Martin.
Feedback. Okay, onto the feedback.
Yes. Hurrah. Onto the feedback, Martin. Thank God I can edit this afterwards. Martin, well, you have some feedback.
It depends if you're in the post-production.
yes, I am doing this. This will make for some great outtakes. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Onto the feedback. Visitor.
Yes. Okay.
You have...
Okay, shall we move on to the next feedback?
please, Martin.
Okay, I have
Make me dead.
Yes, so following up from our brilliant episode on IT security, David has written in and saying, I know you is being an open source podcast, however, as is being a good idea to do the stick insect episode, please.
Which is funky because we have just done this episode. How can David write in if this feedback part is coming right after the IT security thing, Martin?
Yes, but David sent two emails in quick succession, did you not? Why don't you read your email?
I didn't get an email, Martin. I think you just made. You're just making this up.
The feedback email box sometimes, as well as the one from accounts. Or do you
weird.
Need a PA, perhaps?
I think the only person in dire need of a PA is you, Martin. That's beside the point. Uh-huh. I think we should cut this out, because it doesn't make much sense. But anyway. Is there anything else we should talk about? Yes, upcoming episode. Yes.
Hang on a minute. I'm finished with the feedback.
I thought you had.
No, there's another feedback. Why do you not read your mail?
I didn't get these mails.
You didn't get these mails. There's obviously something wrong with your mail system. What are you running this on?
Linux, as a matter of fact. Does it work? It works quite well. Thank you very much.
Do you have too many filters on it, perhaps?
No.
I'm sure. But anyway, the email...
on to the remaining features.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.